The Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan book, Regime Change, is generating significant coverage today. And while individual anecdotes from political books can be treated as gossip, the aggregate picture they paint has policy relevance. The revelation that Melania Trump repeatedly objected to Elon Musk's White House sleepovers, specifically the Lincoln bedroom stays, and was overruled, reflects something about the informal power structures operating within this administration. When the First Lady raises an objection about a tech billionaire's access to the White House residence, and the objection is dismissed, that tells you something about whose concerns carry weight in the internal hierarchy.
The other book revelation that Musk warned Trump about a Taiwan chip crisis is more strategically significant. Musk's financial exposure to Taiwan through Tesla's supply chain and SpaceX's semiconductor dependencies gives him a direct economic interest in how U.S. policy treats Taiwan's security. When private individuals with concentrated financial interests in specific foreign policy outcomes have that level of access to the president, the line between policy advice and lobbying for personal financial interests blurs in ways that have no clear legal remedy under current ethics frameworks.
The Zuckerberg-Trump relationship arc is interesting for what it says about how tech industry postures toward political power. Zuckerberg spent years positioning Meta as a neutral platform, resisting political entanglement, and was widely criticized for perceived liberal bias. The book describes the relationship deepening into full-blown camaraderie, while Trump privately mocked Zuckerberg's early outreach. The asymmetry there, Zuckerberg earnestly cultivating the relationship while Trump was dismissive behind his back, says something about the power dynamics between political and tech leadership right now.
The FBI chief's girlfriend performing at the Freedom 250 rally is a story that tells you about the state of political celebrity more than anything else. Six of the nine originally announced performers pulled out of the event, leaving Lee Greenwood and Alexis Wilkins, Kash Patel's girlfriend, among the remaining acts. The artist exodus from a government-adjacent rally represents a calculation by those artists about reputational risk, which is itself a political economy statement.
The Social Security tax cap legislation, Senators Moreno and Warren pushing to scrap the cap, is the kind of bipartisan-adjacent proposal that sounds simple but carries enormous fiscal implications. Currently, Social Security payroll taxes only apply to wages up to roughly $168,000. Removing that cap entirely would extend the 6.2% employee tax to all wages, which would significantly extend the solvency horizon for Social Security, but would represent a substantial tax increase on high earners. The unusual alliance between Moreno, a Republican, and Warren signals some political movement on entitlement financing, though passage in the current Congress remains unlikely.
The federal judge's ruling, barring ICE arrests at immigration courts nationwide, is a significant procedural constraint. The argument is that arresting people who have voluntarily appeared at immigration court to comply with legal process undermines the court system's ability to function and creates a deterrent against legal compliance. The practical effect, if the ruling holds, is that people with pending immigration cases can attend court appearances without arrest risk. The administration is certain to appeal, and the Supreme Court's recent ruling on green card protections may be relevant precedent depending on how that appeal is framed.
Now I want to pivot to something I think we need to interrogate seriously, and it connects to the AI stock sell-off story we touched on earlier. The confident claim circulating right now, from SoftBank's Sun to the biggest names in venture capital, is that AI's economic returns will be so transformative that current valuations are justified even at multiples that look extreme by historical standards. Sun specifically says doubters are committing blasphemy. The bull case is that we're in the early innings of an infrastructure cycle analogous to the internet, and the companies building AI infrastructure will benefit from decades of compounding returns.
Let me push on the weaknesses in that argument, because I think it's worth doing seriously. The foundational assumption is that AI capabilities will continue scaling at recent rates, that more compute translates into proportionately more useful intelligence. But there are real signals that pure scaling is encountering diminishing returns. The shift from GPT-4 to GP5 to GP5 has produced meaningful but progressively less dramatic improvements per dollar of compute spent. If the scaling ceiling is lower than the bull case assumes, the revenue justification for current infrastructure spending evaporates quickly.
The second assumption I'd challenge is that the companies building AI infrastructure will capture the economic value from AI adoption rather than having that value flow to the businesses using AI tools. Think about what happened with business software in the 1990s. Enterprise software like Oracle and SAP created enormous efficiency gains for corporations. But Oracle and SAP didn't capture most of that value. The corporations using the software did, through higher margins and competitive advantages. The pick-and-shovel thesis for AI assumes a different outcome this time.
The third assumption is market structure, that a small number of foundational model providers will maintain pricing power as AI becomes more widely adopted. But open-source models are advancing rapidly. Meta's Llama series, Mistral, and others have demonstrated that near-frontier capability can be achieved without proprietary training runs at the scale OpenAI or Google deploy. If open-source models commoditize the model layer, the pricing power for commercial AI providers compresses dramatically.
So what would tell us the bull case is still intact? Three signals to watch. First, enterprise AI contract renewal rates at current pricing. If Fortune 500 companies are renewing AI contracts at or above initial rates, that's evidence of genuine productivity capture. Second, the revenue per unit of compute ratio for leading AI providers. If revenue grows faster than compute costs, the economics are working. Third, whether open source models close the capability gap with commercial frontier models within the next 12 to 18 months. If open source catches up by late 2027, the pricing power thesis for commercial AI is significantly weakened.
The honest answer is that both the bull and bear cases for AI valuations have serious empirical support. Sun could be right that we're seeing the early phase of a multi-decade compounding cycle. The AI stock sell-off could be correcting to a more rational valuation without signaling sector collapse. What we're not prepared to do is pretend that the $60 billion cursor valuation or Sun's $6.2 trillion target are self-evidently justified by current revenue. The gap between ambition and demonstrated return is still significant enough to warrant real skepticism alongside real enthusiasm.